Hello, and welcome to the Bitcoin Roundup podcast presented by Coinbits. We bring Bitcoin news, hot topics of conversation, and deep dives into a variety of Bitcoin topics to you weekly. We are Coinbits, a Bitcoin financial services company. Check us out at coinbits.app. This recording is for informational purposes only. No investment or legal or any other advice should be drawn from this content. And as always, consult an advisor before making any legal or financial decisions.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Bitcoin and Chill Friday, hosted by the Coinbits team. Welcome, CK. Good afternoon. How are you?
What's up, Ruiz? Happy Friday. Happy to Bitcoin and Chill.
Happy Friday, indeed. You know, it's funny. I was thinking one of us would say Happy Friday to the other person. And I was thinking also that it's so backwards that we look forward to the end of the work week. You know, imagine on a Bitcoin standard where everybody's working in things that interest them and things that they're passionate about, adding value to other humans. It'd be the opposite. They'd look forward to Monday more than Friday and Monday. And Happy Friday.
Everyone knows, my magazine knows that I start Mondays with a Happy Monday. So we definitely feel that way at Bitcoin Mag.
Nice. That's awesome. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time and welcome everybody. Thank you for joining us here on this Bitcoin and Chill Friday. We're Coinbits. I'm going to do a quick intro here. So we're Coinbits. Check us out, coinbits.app. Nothing that we talk about in this conversation is financial. DK is not a financial advisor. We are not your financial advisors either. So please consider that as you continue to listen to us in this conversation today. We'll be covering how to build a Bitcoin business, specifically, you know, CK's business, which is BTC Media Inc., through the bear and bull cycle and you know, other ancillary things that we want to pick CK's brain on. So CK, thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with us today. And let's first off give people, I mean, I don't think you need an introduction, definitely not to the people on the space right now, but probably for people who listen to this later as a podcast who might be in the class of 2020, 2021, who may not necessarily know who you are or might be seeing or hearing of you for the first time. Give people kind of a high-level introduction to how, you know, what your pre-Bitcoin world, what you did in fiat world, how you found out about Bitcoin, how you got involved with BTC Media Inc., and kind of just a quick high-level intro to who you are, if you don't mind.
Yeah, totally. Happy to kind of jump into my Bitcoin story. 2017, I was working in Silicon Valley doing software sales. I was at my second, like, kind of venture-funded startup at the time. And, you know, that was, for those who were around in 2017, the Bitcoin price was going up quite a bit. And, you know, a friend of mine had kind of finally gotten me to take a look at it and pay attention to it for the very first time beyond, like, you know, funny internet money thing that I've heard of. And I was immediately hooked and capped. I feel like I was really lucky to be primed kind of on several different elements and layers that allowed me to see the importance of Bitcoin pretty much immediately. But just to kind of go through some of that priming, I was already obsessed with personal finance. So I had read The Richest Man in Babylon, had read Poor Dad or Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you know, was kind of going down the personal finance rabbit hole, the credit card game rabbit hole, you know, travel guy or points guy and all that kind of stuff. So that was one, like, layer of framing, was the personal finance framing and the investing framing. The next was, strangely enough, I had spent a decent amount of time in college with a professor who was studying open source communities, big data communities, how they communicate and coordinate amongst each other in order to kind of open source tech at a university level. So strangely, something that is very much super relevant to Bitcoin. And now that professor, him and I are still friends, and he's 100% in on Bitcoin. So, you know, both of our research really led to Bitcoin. And then that last framing, which was super important back in 2017, was the startup framing. I had been working for venture funded startups, and I had seen effectively really shitty businesses raising millions of dollars from VCs. And the reason that was important is 2017 was the ICO mania, and that's when really shitty folks were raising an enormous amount of money, exponentially more than venture-funded startups, with these initial coin offerings. So a lot of newbies kind of getting into the game were getting captivated by blockchain, Ethereum, ICOs, especially people in the Bay Area. But kind of because of that trifecta of priming personal finance, the open source software development, and the experience I've already had kind of undeserving startups who got raised a decent amount of money, it kind of allowed us to start looking up like what is wrong with crypto, what is wrong with blockchain. And that led me down like the Bitcoin maximalist rabbit hole. So for Bitcoin, fall of 2017, became a Bitcoin maximalist within 2 or 3 months of that. And then 2 weeks before Christmas, I put in my 2 weeks at my shitty startup, and I began my kind of journey without a plan to start working in the Bitcoin space. So that's really how I kind of entered into the ecosystem. What I did next was, you know, after quitting my job 2 weeks before Christmas, aka the top of the Bitcoin market at the time, I immediately went to a conference. So there's a North American Bitcoin conference happening in Miami. It's more like the North American shitcoin conference. One of my biggest regrets is not taking a photo of the banana coin pop-up that was there, just because it's so hilarious. But really, like, there was legit, there's banana coin, there was a radiology chain, like there's all kind of like wacky stuff there. But so the BTC Inc. team was there. So I met the CRO at the time, shook his hand, said, "Hey, I love Bitcoin. I live in the Bay Area. I do sales." And really, I think 3 weeks later, after several interviews, I scored a gig at Bitcoin Magazine. So February, I think 14th or 15th, 2018, I started my first day at Bitcoin Magazine. And the rest is really history. So really had the opportunity to ride the waves at the company, grow within the company, and go from event sales to now I have the privilege of being the general manager at the company, and it's a lot of fun. The business has also transformed a lot over the course of, you know, the last 5 years I've been there. So happy to kind of talk about that transformation, talk about the Bitcoin only industry, tell our company story.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll let you catch your breath there. What a story. I mean, I think a lot of the people that came in that cycle of 2017 hype went down, myself included, probably went down the shitcoin rabbit hole for much longer than you did. And, you know, good for you to kind of see the, you know, see through that nonsense as quickly as you did. I think that's kind of rare, I think, for the class of 2017 to have seen through the crypto noise as quickly as you have, especially with, you know, the limited amount of resources at the time. I mean, like the explosion in Bitcoin education since, you know, I'd say 2018. I mean, the What Bitcoin Did podcast, right? The biggest podcast in the space, only started, I think, in 2018. And so, you know, you had Marty Bent doing his thing for a while also, but, you know, there wasn't a ton of resources. And just the fact, you know, if I were to sum up your background, which you just shared with us, thank you for sharing that, by the way, in kind of one phrase, I would say it would be the perfect storm for minting a Bitcoiner. And I think, at least in the Western world, like, I think, you know, people in less financially privileged places might have a shorter path than most. But I think in terms of somebody who grew up in California near Silicon Valley, had the background that you did, the fact that you saw through that nonsense as quickly as you did, I think is because of the perfect storm of events in your life that led to you seeing that. So thank you for sharing that. I think the most intriguing thing in your story to me is that you had right away kind of wanted to work in Bitcoin. And at the time, there wasn't really a ton of Bitcoin-only organizations. It was, you know, the wave of Bitcoin-only companies, I would say, really picked up in maybe the 2019 frame, 2018, 2019, 2017. I mean, there was like, you know, there was Coinbase, there was the exchanges, crypto exchanges. And the fact that you were able to join BTC Media Inc. in the shitcoin conferences is just, I think, speaks volumes about your relentlessness. It shows definitely in how the company grew. So take us through that. You know, take us through the early, you joined BTC Media, I think, pretty early. I don't know exactly how the company started, but it couldn't have been too much prior to your joining. How was it in kind of the early days of trying to build a Bitcoin, specifically a Bitcoin-only organization, right at the start of the bear market in 2018, where, you know, shitcoins were still kind of at a much higher valuation, you know, relative to where they were earlier. So tell us about that. And what's it like to really try to focus on Bitcoin only when really all the capital in the world was focused on, you know, the whole blockchain, not Bitcoin narrative?
Yeah, I mean, totally. So just to kind of like give some context, you know, when I joined BTC Inc., we were not Bitcoin only. And the Bitcoin only movement had not started yet. You know, there's probably like two or three like Bitcoin only companies, maybe it was like Blockstream. Yeah, I mean, a handful of other companies, like really not much at the time. And really the trend was companies starting as Bitcoin only and then going multi-coin. That was the trend kind of going from like 2015 all the way through 2018. So when I first started at BTC Inc., you know, we did Bitcoin Magazine, but we also did a website called distributed.com. Bitcoin Magazine itself was, it would cover Bitcoin and crypto. There, you know, obviously there's like the history of Vitalik's early involvement in Bitcoin Mag. The first event I ever planned was called Distributed 2018, which had, you know, like a Bitcoin focus area, but it also had like a DeFi focus area when that was kind of starting to really start up. But, you know, the entire time leadership at the company were very committed to Bitcoin. Bitcoin was really like their main focus. And my personal focus was very much Bitcoin and Bitcoin only as well. So it was really interesting in those early days, like, hey, this is a cool company. You know, I'm having fun. I get to work in the industry. I get to work remotely. You know, all of those things were awesome and big reasons why I took the. But it actually wasn't until early 2019, David Bailey made the decision to divest our distributed brands and to make Bitcoin Magazine Bitcoin only, subsequently followed by launching the Bitcoin Conference and Bitcoin 2019. And I remember at the time I called my boss, Rod, who is now founded Bitcoin Park. And I was like, Rod, you know, this is now turned into my dream company. Like, you know, we're finally, you know, only focused on Bitcoin, none of this other. No, I'm so excited. And honestly, that was, I'm pretty sure that, you know, we started, you know, the modern Bitcoin only movement for businesses. So us making that move, us launching the Bitcoin Conference in 2019, you know, that was one of the very first big waves and one of the very first companies in the ecosystem that said, hey, we're going to go from multi-coin to only Bitcoin. That is a strategic advantage. So since then, you know, obviously Bitcoin Magazine has grown leaps and bounds. We've brought back the print magazine. We've launched a ton of different products. I've had the privilege of being able to recruit and find a ton of amazing Bitcoiners and support their journey into becoming professionals in the space. And, you know, obviously we brought the Bitcoin Conference back, Bitcoin 2019, Bitcoin 2021, and last 2022 with 26,000 people attending, over 100,000 people in Miami Beach, the biggest fintech event of the year, as well as the number one event in all of Miami Beach's history in terms of media impressions. So it's been a wild freaking ride just going from, hey, we're going to become Bitcoin only to, you know, now we have this event in the entire crypto space, one of the biggest fintech events in the world, you know, able to ride that Bitcoin wave over the last 5 years. So, I mean, it's been wild. It's been crazy. And, you know, we made the move to, you know, drop blockchain and focus on the Bitcoin narrative. You know, like the Bitcoin Mac, pretty much everyone else thought it was a really stupid business decision, but we knew that the focus was actually strategic. And, you know, I think it's becoming more and more obvious that the Bitcoin focus is continuing to be an advantage for businesses that are taking it. And I think that's going to continue to be the case. So focusing on Bitcoin, focusing on, you know, 80% of the overall crypto market with one asset, focusing on the most important brand, focusing on the protocol that actually has a chance of succeeding. It's a very good business and strategic decision. So, you know, at the time it was controversial, and, you know, I'm pretty glad that, you know, I think that we are directionally correct with that.
Definitely directionally correct. A lot more than directionally correct, I would say. I think that, you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of parallels between kind of what you said and the Coinbits story. I mean, Coinbits is, as an organization, is also on the Bitcoin standard, and that has, you know, that has ramifications, right? It's hard to, you know, scale as quickly as you'd want to, but over the long term, that is the right business strategy to have. And, you know, that's what MicroStrategy is doing. That's what Michael Saylor is doing. And, you know, Bitcoin Magazine, you guys have definitely been on that, on the forefront of that movement of being Bitcoin only, and proudly so. But I'm sure in the beginning, I mean, you spoke a little bit about finding talent. I'm saying, especially when, you know, the talent that needs to be had is kind of more on the technical side, you know, coders and programmers and people who are just even journalists, right? You would want to cover a broader space like quote unquote crypto versus Bitcoin only. What was it like? I mean, it's easy to now see the success, and any plebs that are on this space now who have been to Miami can just see the scale of that massive, you know, it's amazing that you guys are able to pull planning off for, you know, an event like that in a year or less, probably a lot less. You can tell stories about that a little later, but, you know, it's very easy to see kind of the tip of the success, but behind that, underneath all that, took a lot of work, and I'm sure it took a lot of struggle, especially early on, to find people to be taken seriously by vendors, partners, banks, trying to keep, there's a lot of stories of like trying to keep a bank account with, you know, especially early on before Bitcoin was as mainstream as it is today. What was that like? Take us through, you know, take us through the logistics behind the scenes of building a Bitcoin business before Bitcoin was as big as it is today.
Well, I would say that from a recruiting perspective, building a Bitcoin-only business is actually, it's really easy to recruit. It's actually one of the easiest, that's like one of the easiest elements of building a Bitcoin-only business. You know, sometimes there are challenges in terms of like, there's a very specific skill set that you need, and maybe it's difficult to find a Bitcoiner who's looking for a job that has that skill set. But beyond that, really any sort of generalized roles, the easiest hack to getting awesome employees is to hire Bitcoiners. Bitcoiners work harder, they're more excited about it, they're up earlier, and really, even when they're not working, they're working. You know, they understand the business better, and they're able to kind of align, you know, what they do for fun with what is best for the business. So it was, I actually thought that it was a superpower to, you know, like, hey, if you're a journalist who wants to cover crypto, like we're not talking to you because like you're not a Bitcoiner. But if you're a Bitcoiner who can write, you know, there's probably no other place that you'd want to be working than Bitcoin Magazine. So there's definitely not a ton of struggle there. And if anything, it's been one of like Bitcoin Magazine's biggest strength is being able to recruit awesome talent and have awesome talent come and be interested in working for us. When it came to corporate sponsors, when it came to funding, when it came to getting different cities to take us seriously, that definitely was a lot more of a struggle. But, you know, as we continue to execute over the years consistently, you know, that kind of positioning really changes. And, you know, last year with Bitcoin 2022, you know, we had massive corporations a part of that event, either attending or sponsoring altogether. You know, these are people that we would have never dreamed would be answering our phone calls back in 2019. So the speed in which the operation has scaled and the speed in which, you know, our ability to kind of get attention and be taken seriously is really mind-blowing. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, our grit and our hustle and our strategy. But a lot of it also has to do with like Bitcoin's growing up, and it's undeniable. You know, it's much more undeniable in 2022 than it was in 2019. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think for anybody who attended the conference, I mean, just between 2021, that was the first one that I attended, and 2022, I mean, just the massive change in scale was extraordinary. I remember getting to, I'll give you some criticism here, well deserved, I think you've heard it before, but in 2021, I remember getting to the location, and it wasn't on Miami Beach. It's like Miami, like, I don't remember what the area was called, but I remember getting there an hour early because anticipating just the lines to get in. And, you know, day one, I was like the line wrapped around the building, maybe like a quarter mile away. I was there an hour early. And just like between day one and day two, the agility with which you guys acted to open up a second line, I think a second entrance altogether, the level of security that you needed to have just overnight. I mean, that kind of agility just speaks to how, you know, it speaks to the Bitcoin spirit, right? Like adapt or perish kind of thing. And you guys were able to manage that second day much better than the first day. And then, you know, fast forward to 2022, I mean, there was no lines, like entrance in 2022, even though the number of people that attended Bitcoin 2022, I'd imagine was well above 2021. There was a lot of the issues around constraints with getting food and getting into the building and getting seating, and all of that was like eliminated altogether, which, you know, for the massive scale and the amount of people that were there, and, you know, and just organizing it with volunteers and people who are passionate about this, I think speaks volumes to exactly what you're saying. It's just like the hustle, the grit, and getting it done. And that's exactly the advantage of being Bitcoin only, as you spoke about earlier, because when you have people who are passionate, who this isn't a job for them, right? This is a way of life. This is, I think the best term to describe it is like ideological Bitcoiners, right? People who are going to fight for Bitcoin and do what it takes to get things done. When you have that, I mean, any business in any field would die. You know, people who work for that business who carry that spirit. So kudos to you guys. And, you know, Bitcoin 2023, we're looking forward to that. Chill that a little bit. I know you guys are announcing speakers here basically every week. So for folks who may not have their tickets yet, or maybe like the bear market got them down and not as excited about Bitcoin this year as perhaps last year, maybe this is their first cycle, What are you looking forward to in Bitcoin 2023?
Yeah, well, thanks for kind of like pointing out, you know, an example of, you know, the lines at Bitcoin 21. It was definitely a struggle. Just to kind of give a little background, Bitcoin 2019, 1,800 people. So that's less than 2,000. Bitcoin 2020 was supposed to be 4,000 people, but it got canceled because of COVID. Bitcoin 2021 in Miami Beach, people. So jumping from, you know, 1,800 people to 12,000 people, definitely from an organizational perspective, a logistics perspective, was a little bit of a punch in the face. I remember like all fire alarm, you know, all the alarm bells were kind of going off internally, you know, with like, oh my God, the lines are horrible. Like, what's happening? Like, we need to deal with this at Bitcoin 21. And it was definitely a really top priority for Bitcoin 22, was to like make sure that the lines were moving quickly and that people were having a good experience. So that's just like, you know, I think the history of the Bitcoin conference was really us growing way too fast and learning on the fly. So that's been, it's been a lot of fun, you know, but coming up to this year's event, you know, into learning on the fly, every single time we put on one of these events, we have a ton of wins. We have kind of a ton of things that we could have done better or we had to like learn from. And one of the tough things about doing an annual event, or you know, now we're doing two events a year with Bitcoin Amsterdam, is you just don't get that many iteration cycles, right? You know, we're on our like fourth iteration now. So getting that kind of feedback, incorporating it, and then making the event better the next year is something that we take super, super seriously. And one of the key things that we're really trying to nail this year is making sure that the content is as interesting, thought-provoking, and exciting as possible. So, you know, there's a lot of Bitcoin events out there these days. Not every single one of those Bitcoin events is a great platform for businesses making announcements. Not every single one of those Bitcoin events is able to bring the significant from outside of like the direct Bitcoin enthusiast community. And we're able to do, how can we do that effectively? And how can we do that in a way that is tasteful, in the way that excites our audience, in a way that pushes Bitcoin forward? You know, I think that, you know, again, we've had big wins, but there's a lot of areas where, you know, we can improve and improve on that feedback. So I really think that, you know, Bitcoiners out there really thrilled with the content. I think that the conversations that we're having are conversations that can only be had at this event. And I think that they're conversations that plebs and Bitcoiners and industry folk, they have been waiting for. They've been excited for. So we're really honored to, you know, really knock it out of the park from like content perspective. And the other area is, I think on the experience perspective, you know, this is the first time that we're doing an event in the same venue. So we got to learn a lot about the Miami Beach Convention Center last year. You know, again, there's a lot of wins and a lot of things that we could have done better. You know, one of the kind of complaints was that the venue is absolutely huge. And things were pretty spread out. So people were definitely getting their steps in. We've definitely, you know, have a much, much more strategic strategy on how to kind of maintain that space and to really keep things in a logical kind of format for attendees to have the best experience possible. So I think people, you know, last year were really wowed by the scale and the production value. And I think that this year people are going to be really excited by just how, you know, how excellent the event is run and how great it is for networking and how great it is for meeting people for the first time and really moving things forward. They said Bitcoin winter is for building. It's for, you know, the lack of noise. And we're really optimizing the space, the content, the environment in order to create the best space for people to get jobs, people to network and build businesses, to raise funds, to, you know, close business deals, all the above. We're really focused on, you know, how are the serious people in this ecosystem going to continue moving Bitcoin forward, and how do we create the best platform for them to all come together in order to do that?
Amazing. If this wasn't a rally cry to get your Bitcoin 2023 tickets, if you don't have them yet, I don't know what will convince you, but Miami Beach, it's coming up soon. If you don't have your tickets, ticket prices, I think they go up quickly. So
next Friday, ticket prices go up next Friday, 104 days away from the event, May 18th through the 20th. And it's the perfect time to kind of get away from your day job, go hang out with some Bitcoiners on the beach. And yeah, it's going to be a blast. So, you know, we got deals, we got opportunities out there. I think all the way up until Valentine's Day, buy one ticket, get one half off. So, you know, bring your spouse, you know, orange pill a friend, whatever. It's a great opportunity. And I've been saying this for a long time. So sometimes Bitcoiners can be a little rough on the edges here on Twitter, but Bitcoiners by far are best in person. So come meet Bitcoiners in person, you know, orange pill in person with Bitcoiners when they see how awesome, how exciting, how, you know, kind of freedom loving and energetic this community.
Couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, for Bitcoiners who haven't been to an event like that live, especially with the Bitcoin conference, just because of the scale. I mean, we could talk about the numbers until we're blue in the face, but until you're there, you actually like experience it in person with, you know, 20,000 other plebs, there's no words that I think can properly describe the feeling of a bunch of people coming together for the ideological reason that Bitcoin brings us all together, which is freedom money. And, you know, experiencing that live, being in the same location with everyone is just a completely different experience than you could have on Twitter Spaces or Clubhouse or just being on Bitcoin Twitter all day. Like, there's just something that being in the same place, in the same vicinity with other Bitcoiners that you just can't, you know, you can't equate. So really looking forward to that, CK. I think you spoke about the seriousness with which you guys take organizing it and your goals behind organizing it, which are right on par with what you would expect from a Bitcoin company. And we're looking forward to that. So tell us a little bit about you spoke about this a little bit within the Bitcoin, you know, within the conference itself. I mean, and I think you've said this before, where essentially, you know, basically there's nothing, Bitcoin is only exponential. There's nothing linear about it. And that shows in the attendees that you've had in the conference, and it shows in the level of seriousness with which vendors and banks and partners kind of take Bitcoin businesses, and we can attest to that ourselves at Coinbit. But also it's true about the cost of things and you know, how Bitcoin's price volatility, Bitcoin's USD exchange rate, I won't even call it price, impacts things from a business perspective. Is there, you know, how do you guys have, I think, recently had a round of layoffs that is, I think, probably primarily driven by just the fiat rates and the volatility that we experience in fiat. Talk to us about some of those challenges. Like, give us like a behind the scenes look at how you, as a high ranking member of the company, look at Bitcoin's price movements and try to, you know, again, the exponential moves up and down, try to make fiat business decisions, unfortunately, until we're on Bitcoin standard in the realm of Bitcoin land and trying to stay true to the values of Bitcoin. What is that like?
Yeah, well, our CFO, D, he's in the audience. You guys are going to have him on sometime. He knows a ton about kind of dealing with Bitcoin as a treasury asset, a reserve asset for a business. Yeah, I mean, what I would say is that, like, generally speaking, until proven otherwise, Bitcoin kind of has these cycles of massive growth and then obviously a cooling down period. And that affects everything about a Bitcoin business. One, if you're holding Bitcoin, that affects your treasury. Two, that also affects, for us, all the other businesses in the Bitcoin ecosystem, which are our clients. And that affects our audience, both with, you know, people, you know, whether it's convicted people and their ability to afford going to a different city for a conference and, you know, spend a bunch of money for networking and for, you know, having a good time at the event. And that also affects who, you know, what we call like the tourists or people who are just interested about Bitcoin, who just, you know, lose interest altogether. So it's definitely a challenge to not only build a business, you know, with like dealing with the fiat volatility, you know, just the volatility in the land, but also kind of dealing with the volatility cycles in the Bitcoin land. And I think what's most important here is, at least for a Bitcoin business, is to not overextend when, you know, things are really increasing and getting good. And to kind of have an eye on the prize for you know, taking advantage of the good and bringing in as much sats and dollars as possible. And then when times get bad, is identifying that quickly and being on top of it. So, you know, Bitcoin Magazine, BTC Inc. has been through 3 cycles. You know, I personally think every cycle has had its pain. Every cycle has given us opportunities that we've done a good job of taking advantage of despite the pain. And, you know, the better a business is at kind of managing that volatility and you know, not overextending itself when things are good and the money is flowing, you know, the more powerful it is, you know, coming out of the end of the winter per se. So yeah, I mean, we definitely had to let go of some amazing Bitcoiners. Definitely, you know, grew a lot to kind of meet the demand that was happening, you know, even throughout 2021 and 2022. But, you know, we had to be as honest as possible about ourselves, you know, given all the kind of, I would say, like negative price action and difficulties within the industry, and make sure that we were set up well for sustainability moving into the future. So, you know, you kind of saw this trend of Bitcoin businesses and crypto businesses getting really big and over leveraged over the course of this past bull run. And, you know, 2022 and even the beginning of 2023 has kind of been the story of returning back down to earth. And it definitely is painful. But on the flip side, you know, we've been able to hire and we've benefited from Bitcoiners leaving or getting laid off at other Bitcoin companies. And I know that more than 60 or 70% of the people that we had to move away from are alumni. They were able to land jobs in the Bitcoin ecosystem. So there is a little bit of reshuffling per se. And generally speaking, I've been very impressed this time around with the Bitcoin ecosystem and how much Bitcoin businesses were kind of prepped for and able to kind of deal with, you know, the past year of declining price action and increasing kind of hardship within the industry. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head. And I think, you know, even for us who kind of know and expect the cyclical nature of Bitcoin, at least fiat denominated price for now, it's hard to forecast. And it's hard to forecast, not so much because of, you know, the nature of Bitcoin or any of Bitcoin itself, but because of how broken the fiat system and how mispriced capital is. And then, you know, you throw in there 12 people, the Fed, making decisions that impact billions of people. And it's an impossible thing to try to forecast, especially after years and years of cheap and essentially free money. And he's, you know, it's like Max Kaiser always says, you can't taper a Ponzi. And so you immediately feel the aftershocks, and the aftershocks are completely unpredictable. And it's hard to, you know, it's hard to manage that. And then you throw on top of that, all the FTX and Voyager and BlockFi and all that drama of rehypothecation and essentially recreating the fiat system within our small, tiny, relatively speaking, Bitcoin world in terms of just the financial size of it. And that just throws a wrench into everything. And so I think it's really promising, I think, to hear that a lot of the folks who were with Bitcoin Magazine were able to stay in Bitcoin, find the ability to add value to the space in other organizations. That's a really good thing to hear. Dee, I think I added you because I wanted to hear your perspective on this from a financier point of view. Thank you. And thank you for joining and welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks for bringing me up. Yeah, the biggest thing I'll say, you know, for people that are listening that are, you know, looking to start a Bitcoin business or are curious how existing Bitcoin businesses navigate, you know, the interchange between fiat that we have to use just because that's the world we live in by and large. And, you know, Bitcoin is create incentives for your partners to accept Bitcoin. The more you have Bitcoin denominated liabilities, the more it makes sense to have Bitcoin assets, not then expose. You don't have to worry about the fluctuating rate. So, you know, good question is, all right, how do I do that? You know, for us and our partners, I extend more favorable payment terms to vendors that are willing to accept Bitcoin. And, you know, we talk about orange pilling a lot. You know, orange pilling isn't just, you know, talking to somebody at the grocery store. I mean, think about when you're working at a business. I mean, you're engaging in commerce all the time. So, you know, we offer, you know, better payment terms to people that pay in Bitcoin and even better pricing as well if we're able to. And it's not just like a LARP or a just doing it out of, you know, your own sort of like altruistic, you know, desire for Bitcoin to proliferate. There is like legitimate business reasons to try to operate in a Bitcoin standard. A good example that we have at Bitcoin Magazine is sending Bitcoin to a vendor or a partner so much easier than sending a freaking wire. I mean, when we did Bitcoin Amsterdam, that was like the most illuminating nightmare of dealing with international wire systems. And, you know, it's like a true actual business case of I can send a Bitcoin transaction and then send a link to the mempool and say, boom, 5 minutes, your payment's there. Sending a wire is the most like opaque, multi-business days, my bank talking to your bank, hey, I haven't received my wire, let me call my bank. It is the biggest, like, who's on first, who's on third, mishmash ever. So there's true, and this is the funny thing, when people try to rattle off a lot of the practical benefits of Bitcoin, I mean, they're so real. There's no easier way to pay a business on the planet right now, internationally especially, than Bitcoin, period. And if somebody has a better way, I would love for them to tell me, because it doesn't exist. So that's the biggest thing I would encourage people is, like, you know, if you're trying to build a Bitcoin business or you're curious how people try to navigate it, you got to get your liabilities in Bitcoin. So, you know, I encourage vendors, encourage employees to get paid in Bitcoin within reason, you know, where what people are comfortable with. And it definitely makes managing the interchange between fiat and Bitcoin easier.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you echoed a lot of last month. It's not yet on our podcast, but it will be shortly. We spoke with Matt Snow and Christopher Calcutt from Trammell Ventures. And we were talking to them about, you know, they're a Bitcoin-focused venture capital firm. We were talking to them about exactly that, like, how do you look at it from a venture capital standpoint? And they view it the same way. Essentially, they're a Bitcoin business too, right? So they're looking to denominate as much of their expenses and their future cash flows in Bitcoin. And it's about a Bitcoin world. And then we also spoke to Marty Bent about this at BitBlock Boom last year about 1031. That's also a Bitcoin focused venture capital firm. And they have the same outlook, is that how do I, as a venture capital firm, look to get Bitcoin cash flows in the future? And basically they're willing, both of them said in various terms, that they're willing to discount, you know, essentially cash flow today for future Bitcoin cash flows in the future. And so that's the killer app of Bitcoin, right? Is the ability to grow your purchasing power relative to everything else. And as long as you have a long enough time horizon and you're able to meet your short-term cash needs in fiat today, then as a business, there is no better strategy, right? And that's why, you know, that's the entire thesis that Michael Saylor has said in, you know, 15 million different ways, is that's the way to go. And there's no reason why you as a business can do anything else other than try to save in Bitcoin and try to manage your short-term debt as much as you can in fiat. So that sounds like consistent message from all the Bitcoin companies that we've spoken to. And I'm glad that you guys are following that strategy too. I think for anybody who's looking to start a Bitcoin business, now is the time, right? Start to think about how to do that. Start to think about how you could add value to the space. And there will be no shortage, I think, if you're a Bitcoin-focused entrepreneur, there is no shortage of people willing to help within the Bitcoin space. And actually, the Bitcoin conference is a great place to go and share your idea. I think the first day before the conference actually kicks off is a pitch day. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, or Dee?
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in. I was about to say the same thing, that at the Bitcoin conference, you know, the best three-day forum in order to come together and start a business. I can name, you know, at least off the top of my head, like 6 or 7 businesses that have started or were inspired or got funding at one of our Bitcoin conferences. And, you know, that's just what I'm aware of. Like, so there's tons and tons of conversations that are happening that I have no idea about. But yeah, our first day at the event is called Industry Day, only open to Industry Day and Whale Day and VIP ticket holders, as well as sponsors and speakers. So it's a very, very high signal day, and it's really focused on the business of Bitcoin. And one of the elements of Industry Day is like a Shark Tank style pitch competition. We've done this since Bitcoin 2021. Awesome companies have come out of it, including, you know, the Bitcoin company, Zebedee, Moon Mortgage, Albi, just to name a few. I believe Swan, the founders, came together at Bitcoin 2019. They're one of the very first companies that formed at the Bitcoin conference. So really try to, you know, create an awesome environment for those types of conversations to happen and for that kind of work to happen. And we're planning a ton of stuff around the financial angle of Bitcoin. There's been a lot of kind of shakeup around investing in Bitcoin financial, you know, assets and things that give people access to Bitcoin. And, you know, we're trying to build a forum for people to hash that out at the conference as well. So today is definitely something to consider, especially if you're an entrepreneur, investor, or builder in the space. And then, you know, just to kind of give some insight into how the rest of the conference goes down. So the 18th is Industry Day. That's limited access. The next 2 days, GA Day 1 and 2, that is May 19th and the 20th. That is open to everyone. And that is like, it's a full, it's both a B2B as well as a B2C event. It's kind of like the CES, Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas, or it's like CES meets Bitcoin Macan. It's businesses and building, and it's just a whole bunch of like fun and partying all smashed together. So, you know, it's really about, you know, industry and businesses. Day 2 and 3, that's open to the entire attendance, really about just celebrating like this Bitcoin movement and every element of it. So yeah, that's kind of the breakdown of the events, kind of how it goes together. And if I could just add something in, with coin being a superior form of payment, especially for international business, like one, it's super, super evident when it comes to the wires, but two, it's also evident when it comes to accepting payment with credit card for a product that you deliver, and then the risk of chargebacks. So every product that we sell on our store that, you know, we're accepting fiat for, you know, we have to bake in extra costs because of the fraud that you know, is levied against us from, you know, a percentage of people charging us back. So whether that's for a ticket or whether that's for a magazine or whatever, we deliver the product to them. They enjoy it. They claim it. And to their credit card company, they say, hey, you know, I never made this purchase. The credit card company, of course, you know, sees a Bitcoin company. They don't respect us. That's one of the institutions that still doesn't respect us or any Bitcoin company. I think that there's like a level of, there's a level of, what's the word I'm looking for? Just unfair treatment that comes from the traditional finance industry towards the Bitcoin industry. But ultimately, you know, the extra costs that all consumers have to pay and all businesses, especially businesses that are reliant on credit card, you know, have to deal with. So it is really sinister what the fiat system does in terms of, you know, kind of like levying these invisible taxes on consumers and making everything more expensive because of how bad that system is. Whereas, you know, here's Bitcoin, you accept coin for a service or a product that we're going to deliver to you. There's no way someone can charge us, right? And so we're frequently offering promotions. You know, the current promotion right now is if you buy a Bitcoin conference ticket off our site with Bitcoin, we're going to give you $100 in credit to purchase anything from our store, right? So you can buy a Bitcoin conference ticket, and then with that $100, you can go and, you know, buy some Bitcoin magazines, buy some Bitcoin swag, buy some Bitcoin art from our store as like a thank you for giving us better money and that we can't, you know, get rugged on or we can't get ripped off with. So there are a lot of massive advantages to Bitcoin. And, you know, I don't think the world's going to fully see it until coin is really a prominent form of payment. But the advantages are not just 10x better, 100x better. You know, it's infinitely better. It's something that works versus something that doesn't work. So there's really no comparison.
Yeah, really well said. And I think, you know, as Coinbits is a Bitcoin exchange, Bitcoin only exchange, we see fraud left and right, and it is a nightmare. And it's, I think you know, whether it's intentional or not, I think you could definitely see the treatment from the legacy financial world to Bitcoin. I think, you know, most individual people that are operating these chargeback calls or, you know, managing that type of activity probably just don't know Bitcoin. Or if they do, they probably have heard the mainstream narratives. Oh, it's bad for the environment. Oh, it's for fraud. Oh, it's for, you know, illicit activities. And so that's the impression that they have. And so, of course, they're going to, at the end of the day, they're all humans. And so they're going to treat Bitcoin businesses with that, you know, undue disrespect. But that's why we Bitcoin, right? That's the reason why this movement exists. And that's why freedom money matters so much. Let me shift gears here a little bit. And welcome everybody. For those of you who were with us from the beginning, we're speaking to CK from BTC Media Inc. We've had this conversation recorded. So if you missed the beginning, you definitely want to tune in to the beginning. There's a lot of really insightful things on building a Bitcoin organization that CK is taking us through. And if we like to make this as interactive as possible, so I have a few more questions to get through here with CK. But if you have any questions, feel free to drop them into the comments, bottom right-hand corner of your screen, if you're on mobile. And, you know, any questions that are there that I can get to, I'll definitely be asking. All right, so let's shift gears a little bit.
I do want to, Ruiz, really quick, I do want to flag to you that I do have a hard stop at 3:15, our scheduled time. I got that. D and I, we got a big meeting at 3:30, so I just want to make sure you know.
Yeah, no problem. I'll try to stick to that timing. Thank you for letting me know. So, okay, so let me kind of See here, the one thing that I don't want to miss is asking you about, let's actually start there. So you recently were in India. And, you know, for those of us who are US, Western world, maybe Europe, who had never seen India, never been there, and have an impression that we get from the media, what is the scene like on the ground there? It's one of the biggest countries by population, right? And we have, I would say, I think we have a pretty prescriptive view of what it's like there. Is there a Bitcoin scene there, or are people different from what you expected? What was that like, especially going as a Bitcoiner?
Totally. Well, I guess I'd like to preface it that I met up with zero Bitcoiners, but it wasn't due to Bitcoiners' lack of trying. You know, I was there for one of my wife's best friend's weddings and then a vacation that my wife planned. So, you know, trying not to piss off my wife too much by turning in every vacation into meeting up with Bitcoiners. As a Bitcoiner, and you know, I don't know if it's because I have a decent sized audience and reputation in the space, but it is absolutely incredible. Anytime you go somewhere and you kind of broadcast that, you know, who is going to pop up in your DMs like saying, hey, I'm so-and-so, would love to meet in person. I got like 20 or 30 messages, like a ridiculous amount of messages of Bitcoiners across India trying to meet up. And, you know, I wish I could have taken them up on it, but it really is like something special to tap into this community and just know that you are connected to an entire planet worth of like-minded individuals that are so excited and so eager to be, you know, to be building this technology and be a part of this community. And for a lot of them, you know, they just interact with or hang out with Bitcoiners in person that often. So zooming specifically talking about India, I was in the south. I kind of started on the southeast of India in a city called Chennai. And then I made my way across the entire south of India, did a lot of driving, and I made my way to the west coast of India in a city called Cochin. And India is so packed. It's the streets are wild. So I didn't actually drive. We had a driver who was driving us. I don't think that I would be able to drive safely in India. And, you know, it is just absolutely incredible. There are so many colors. I feel like in the West, everyone is like wearing blacks and blues and grays and whites. You know, everyone in India is tons and tons of color. The women are wearing traditional clothing, saris and lehengas and things like that. The food is super. There's kind of wildlife integrated everywhere. They're extremely busy and hectic. There's a lot of religion. I was actually like really shocked by how many mosques and churches and temples there were all throughout the south of India. But my experience with Bitcoiners was, you know, posting pictures on Twitter and on Noster and having people, you know, trying to meet. It's always just a special experience, you know. In other occasions, you know, I've traveled to Europe or I've traveled to America and had, you know, the exact same experience as well. So it's just really special to be able to travel and meet up with people that you before, but instantly you're friends with them. It's really cool. And then lastly, just kind of talking about the Bitcoin scene in India, let's just say the pre-coiners I hung out with in India, and you know, was interacting with, they weren't really tuned into Bitcoin quite yet. You know, the tour guide who kind of planned our travel, he was kind of like the big boss of that tour company. We spent some time with him, and I was, you know, complaining to him about having to make a wire and then fly with a bunch of cash to complete the remainder of our trip. And that wire was a pain in the butt, and it got lost once and got sent back to me 4 or 3 weeks later with, you know, a 25% hit against it. And I had to send it back to him. And I was trying to be like, hey, man, like, you need to get on Bitcoin. Like, this is way better. And he was like, oh, yeah, no, I don't think people are really into Bitcoin in India yet. But on the flip side, just today, you know, you're seeing news out of India saying that, hey, Bitcoin isn't illegal, actually. And it seems as though there is a vibrant community there trying to push it forward. So I'm not really an expert, but I would say, you know, it's no El Salvador. I think that there's a lot of opportunity and need for Bitcoin there in terms of people needing a better money. There's a lot of experience with people kind of getting defrauded by their government in India and a lot of corruption and fascism that everyone is aware of. But, you know, that orange light bulb hasn't really clicked with the greater population quite yet.
Yeah, gradually then suddenly. You've done your part into orange pill. You're a tour guide. Thank you for that.
Wires suck, guys. International wires suck.
You know what's funny? So do local wires. I think when I wanted to make my first Bitcoin purchase, there wasn't, I don't remember where I was getting it. It might have been Coinbase. Blech. Anyway, the amount of money I wanted to transfer was above what their ACH guidance was. So I had to wire money in. And it was a big FOMO buy. And that was the first time I ever had to deal with a wire ever. I'd never kind of wired money internationally. So it was still like a local wire, US based. And that was a nightmare. I mean, it took 5 days, like 3 phone calls. And just it was like it cost $50. And I was just like, this is stupid. And I can't believe that, you know, the international community, especially ones that have to deal with the US and wires all the time, haven't waken up to just the ease of use that comes with Bitcoin and the finality of settlement. And it's literally light years ahead. But, you know, slowly then suddenly. Let me ask you another question here before I take you to the last question. So I've got two more for you. You're a big fan of home cooking. You've been cooking up a storm. You're always sharing your steak photos. It seems like you have a steak for dinner every day. And that's a good carnivore lifestyle that Saifedean, I don't know if Saifedean is in the audience, usually he joins us, but Saifedean would be very proud. So your latest steak photo, CK, we commented on it. I don't know if you saw our tweet, but that looks like a stainless steel crust on that steak. What's going on with the stainless steel? Tell us about that.
Oh, man. Well, first of all, the best if you're not a home cook or you're not doing any home cooking, the easiest ways to change your health and improve your wealth is to start cooking at home. So, you know, there you are what you eat. So that's something that's worth your time to kind of monitor, do it yourself, do it right. And, you know, make sure that there's no seed oils or aluminum foil or any of that BS kind of touching your food. But yeah, I mean, that steak was made on a cast iron. It was not made on a stainless steel, but I personally have started to experiment with stainless steel as well. I recently learned that, you know, you don't want to cook everything on a cast iron. Cast iron is great for meat. It's great for fat. But, you know, when it comes to like acids and stuff like that, that reacts with the iron. And, you know, you don't really want to be ingesting, you know, I guess, I don't know the specific chemical or reaction that occurs, but you don't want to be ingesting that stuff. So, you know, I think that there's the right cooking equipment for everything. But generally speaking, you want to get more basic. You want to get, you know, a little bit more simple. And personally, I think you want to stay away from just anything and try to pick to what's more wholesome food. So I personally think that, you know, home cooking is just such a important thing. And I'm not a carnivore. I definitely see the benefits. And, you know, a lot of people have talked about the benefits of being a carnivore. I'm definitely more of an omnivore, probably because I'm weak and I like some diversity in my cuisine. But I think there's a lot of benefits to just cooking at home in general and knowing what you're eating. You know, there's an 80-20 there where you can get, you know, 80% of the benefits of a full carnivore diet just by getting off processed foods and foods that are made somewhere else.
All right. Let's keep that to a minimum before Saifedean hears us and starts cursing us out.
Have you used this? Do your own research.
There you go. There is no substitute for your own work. Have you used the stainless steel skillet with a steak yet?
I have not. I made vegetables and I made like a sauce in it. But I have a lot of cooking equipment. If you've been to my house to this point, you know, I have a pretty stocked kitchen, and I got that stainless steel skillet for my birthday. My wife got it for me pretty recently, just because I've been kind of like joking about being stainless steel curious.
Well, you got to report back to us when you've tried to steak in it and get the Twitter and Noster engagement. I was actually commenting on Noster the other day. There's not enough steak content on Noster, so maybe post there. Final question.
I'll exclusively post steaks on Noster moving forward.
There you go. Final question for you, CK, before we let you go. And for those joining us, this conversation is going on for an hour. So if you missed the beginning, this is being recorded and you could listen as soon as we're done here. But for maybe those in the audience or those who might be listening to this later as a podcast, what advice would you give for the class of 2020, 2021, who are maybe in their first bear market here and haven't seen really this side of Bitcoin, have only kind of seen the upside up until last year, and who knows how long we're still going to continue in this bear market? You know, if history is any indication, we might not be completely out of the woods yet. So what advice would you have for someone who's kind of going for their first time?
Oh, man. I mean, I feel like I have a really weird perspective because I've never been like uncomfortably overweight Bitcoin. I've always, you know, been very comfortable with my position, especially in conjunction with kind of like my fiat holdings and my cash flow. So I don't really know what it's like to be really underwater. But I think that there's some wisdom to that approach. I personally, this is my personal perspective, is that any amount you can buy, you know, on this side of the adoption S-curve is going to be worth a ridiculous amount of money if Bitcoin reaches hyper-Bitcoinization, if there's global adoption of Bitcoin as money. So what that means is that, like, you don't have to put yourself in an uncomfortable position from a financial perspective and from a lifestyle perspective in order to get a lot of that upside. So I guess if I could give any recommendation, it's to stay humble and stack sats. You know, this is your best accumulating opportunity is right now. And the best way to accumulate is consistently to purchase without thinking about it too much. And it's don't get over your skis, because I think, you know, my tweet that's pinned to my profile right now, I'll tweet it. But I do think that it's coming from a place of reality, just from observing Bitcoiners behave over the past 5 years I've been involved here. And the tweet goes, I fear that many Bitcoiners will soon reach their all-time high sat count. Why? Too bearish. We'll sell too soon. Poor practices. 3, low personal finance IQ. 4, too much greed. 5, poor OPSEC will become a victim. You likely already have enough sats. Focus on keeping them. So if you're brand new to the space and you bought a 60K, maybe your goal is to get to 100,000 Bitcoin or 100,000 sats or a million sats or 100 million sats, which is a whole Bitcoin. You know, I just say focus on stacking goal you have. Don't overextend yourself. Be patient on the way to getting to it. And it's not all about accumulating. There's a lot of work to be done in terms of storing, in terms of privacy, in terms of your general OPSEC, things that are going to be necessary for keeping your sats and getting across the finish line. The end goal is not selling your Bitcoin for $1 million. It's holding your Bitcoin for when everything is denominated in sats. And there's, you know, and owning 100 million sats, that makes you an extremely wealthy and well-positioned individual. So I hope that, you know, made sense to listening. But, you know, this is such a huge revolution that, and it's going to happen fast, but you do have time. So, you know, take your time, be patient, you know, have to sell all your chairs, and you don't have to make your spouse kind of hate you or think you're crazy in order to take advantage of it.
You're just out here to piss off all the maximalists, aren't you? Pierre, if you're listening to this later, he's just kidding. He means sell all your chairs. No, that's very sound advice. And I think that's what we try to exemplify here at Coinbits, right? And I think the DCA approach is the tried, true, stress-free, and that's the key, stress-free approach to getting Bitcoin exposure and to kind of easily and slowly and without losing your mind with ups and downs and the volatility, not so much a Bitcoin, just a fiat to get sats and to hold on to them. And that's the key thing, is if you overextend yourself, if you find yourself in a position where the majority of your net worth is in Bitcoin and it suddenly crashes, that's a stressful situation to be in. And that's how a lot of people lose their sats. And so don't do that. Size yourself appropriately. Go the slow and steady and tried, true way. Doesn't matter who you DCA with, but we definitely have the best DCA product out there. So check us out, coinbits.app. And especially getting your family in from the lifeboat, I think, is super important, because you need that in person. You know, just going back to the point about the Bitcoin conference and the value of having, you know, Bitcoiners in the same physical space as you. You need your friends and your local community need to be on Bitcoin too. And the easiest and I think the most effective way to get them to do that is in small, tiny steps. And that's why Coinbits, the Rounder product that we have, which rounds up everyday purchases and to the nearest dollar and buys Bitcoin with it. It's the kind of the slow and easy approach to getting people on Bitcoin without them feeling like they're investing or that they're going to need a whole bunch of money or that they need to buy a full Bitcoin, which is still to this day a common misconception that people have. And so that's the way to do it. That's the way to kind of ease into it. And we're so early, you know, to the entire conversation we've had, we're so early that CK is right. Like the other side of that S-curve is going to be any sats you purchase today are going to be massive. And I think CK popularized the 37 sats meme, which we didn't get to speak to a whole bunch and we're running out of time here, but I'll kind of...
Is it popular?
The 37 sats meme? I think it's popular.
Yeah, maybe it's just my circles, but I do think it's working. I've been saying that Bitcoiners are not bullish enough, and I think that frame has been working. The reality is that no one is bullish enough because if this thing works, it's like, you know, being able to predict what electrified world will look like. But, you know, you're sitting in the early 1900s before all the wire has been laid out, right? Like, that's our vantage point. You know, it's like, hey, we're sitting in the dark ages and we want to talk about what global flight looks like. You know, we're just like, we don't have the perspective to forecast what hyper-Bitcoinization looks like. So just be humble. No one's bullish enough and it's impossible to be bullish enough. You're not smart enough. And it's better to just say, hey, this is an exponential technology. If it works, you know, here's my bet. If it doesn't, you know, at least I tried and, you know, life is still all right. Life is still good. So, you know, I think that life would be worse. And I'm pretty confident that Bitcoin's going to work. But, you know, Bitcoin by nature is, in my opinion, is a binary exponential bet.
Couldn't agree more. And what a note to end on. CK, thank you so much, man, for your time. Do you have any last thoughts or where should people continue to follow you? Obviously on Twitter, but any last minute shills here before we close out?
Yeah, go to the Bitcoin conference, b.tc/conference. Tickets go up in price next. Go follow at the Bitcoin Conf. Stay on top of all of our speaker announcements. We have a really big speaker announcement next week as well. And I want to give a shout out to my coach, Diddy, who's up on stage here. He is an absolute legend, absolutely worth a follow. And Chris Alamo, also in the audience. He's our amazing producer. Give him a follow. But yeah, follow Bitcoin Magazine, follow the Bitcoin Conference. Come to the Bitcoin conference, use promo code CK10, save yourself 10% off your ticket, or you can go to our Twitter feed and dig up the code to buy one, get one half off if you're trying to come to the conference with a spouse.
Amazing. We thank you guys so much for pulling that conference together. It's a whole lot of work and it definitely shows in the product. So we appreciate you guys organizing that for us. We appreciate everything that Bitcoin Magazine does and helping spread the Bitcoin message across the globe. And thank you, CK, Diddy, for your time and conversation today. And we look forward to having more of these conversations with you guys in the future.
100%. Thank you for having us. And one last show, buy and subscribe to the most recent Bitcoin Magazine. The Broke Edition is potentially the best one yet. Definitely a statement calling out the media and the crypto fraudster that is SBF.
Mine is coming in the mail today, and I keep looking out my window to see if the mailman has come yet, and I'm so excited to see it. Yes, the Bitcoin Magazine print.
Let's go.
Has been just so good. I mean, my kids pick these magazines up, and they're trying to read and look at the pictures, and they love it. So it's my kids are 7 and 4, so it's actually a good way to orange pill your immediate family if you haven't been able to do that yet. So. Yes, absolutely. Check that out. And once again, thank you, CK, for your time for a conversation today. And hey, best of luck with your big meeting and coming up in 15 minutes. So we'll let you go.
Thank you. See you guys. Happy
Friday. Happy Friday. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Thanks again for joining us.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Bitcoin Roundup podcast presented by Coinbase. So what do you think of the conversation? Share your thoughts with us on Twitter @CoinbaseApp. And be sure to subscribe to be notified of our next episode release. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the Bitcoin Roundup podcast.